Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob.
And we welcome you to Talking.Golf. I'm Rob Hernandez alongside Gary D'Amato. I am in the Northwoods. Gary will be joining me on Monday morning as the Wisconsin State Open kind of brings to a close the major championship season for the regular division of amateur and professional golf in Wisconsin. Gary D'Amato, I can't believe we're already here to the end of August, and we've been looking forward to coming up to Minocqua. I'll say this, I'm in Park Falls as we record this on a Saturday night, and it's cool up here.
Yeah, I looked at the weather forecast, and I think it's going to be beautiful in Minocqua for the State Open, although it looks like it's going to be a little chilly in the morning, Rob. You're going to have to dress up. You're used to that Arizona 90 degrees at 8 a.m., and it's going to be probably in the mid to low 50s, so I expect to see a parka on you when we start covering golf in the morning.
I will definitely at least have my sleeveless pullovers and with the Wisconsin.Golf logo that I had made up just for this occasion. I brought them along, Gary, so I'm
well, good. I'll be in shorts all 3 days because it's still summer for me, Rob.
It is. We'll spend a lot of the hour talking about the State Open, but it is summer, and Gary got to do something the other night that is simply cool is the only way to describe it, and doubly cool when we found out that it wasn't just Gary D'Amato that got the chance to do this, but Bobby Stricker as well. The first pitch at Miller American Family Field, and you got to go first, Bobby second. Is that the order of that thing went?
Yeah, there were actually four people who threw out pitches, and I was second, and Bobby followed me. So it was a obviously a bucket list thing. It's the only time I'll certainly ever do it in my life, and I wish I had thrown a better pitch. I spent 4 days practicing by walking down. I live on a dead end street, Rob. There's train tracks down there, and I was picking up rocks and throwing them at a telephone pole. That's how I got ready for throwing out. I sort of should have been throwing a baseball. Something wrong with seams might have helped because I didn't throw a very good pitch.
I guess my limited expertise as a senior softball player now would be that I think you rushed it. It was kind of like stepping up to the tee and maybe not getting up there without a practice swing. It just I think you should have gone to the not the windup, but just kind of pause a minute on the mound and then release. But I can't imagine what that's like. I mean, when you're standing out there, what are you thinking?
You know, I wasn't nervous one bit until I actually got to the mound and turned around, and Quinton Berry, the Brewers' first base coach, was catching us. And I had paced off 60 feet to throw rocks at the telephone pole, but when I looked at him, he looked like he was 200 yards from me. He was squatting, in his catching stance, and he looked tiny, and I thought, wow, that's a long way to throw a baseball. And I mean, I played baseball, Rob, and I played second base in the men's 48 and over league, and I went to Brewers fantasy camp, but for some reason it just struck me. I don't know, maybe it was the size, the cavernous of, the stadium and all the people up there, but he just looked far away. And I think I did rush it because they told us our instructions were as soon as he flashed the mitt, we're supposed to throw the ball. So as soon as he put up his mitt, I threw, and I probably should have taken a couple seconds just to get ready,
Well, on my end of your night, it started with getting a text from a guy that I did radio broadcast with on high school sports out of Monroe. He was sitting a couple seats down from Steve Stricker and Nikki Stricker, and I'm going, boy, Steve and Nikki are at the game. That's interesting. And then all of a sudden he says, and Gary D'Amato is going to throw out the first pitch. And I'd forgotten it was Wednesday night. And I said, oh, my God. And then I'm going, and then he's taking a picture of Steve and Nikki doing the video of you and Bobby. And
yeah.
I immediately text Steve and said, I can't believe that Bobby and Gary are throwing out the first pitch. And he sends me back the video. You wrote it in your story, in your column, Bobby's just about got all the way to the plate. It was, I guess if we were to describe it in golf terms, you might have been in the right rough, and she was right down the middle of the fairway, almost to the green on a par three.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good description. Mine was low and outside. It probably bounced about equal with home plate, or maybe just slightly in front of it in the dirt. And Quinton Berry, it went under his glove. And when you get to go back to the catcher then and keep the ball, they hand you the ball and you get to keep it. So, you know, someone threw the ball back to Quinton, and I went up to him and he handed it to me, and he said, "Good job." And I said, "Well, not really." I said, "I think I hear a couple of scattered boos up there. I think they're booing me." And he said, "Nah, they're booing me because I should have caught it." So I said in my column, we'll mark it down as a pass ball. That makes me feel a little better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's just one thing in the week. And then the two of us were on opposite ends of kind of the U.S. amateur making news. I got to cover Garrett Jones and his becoming the first Wisconsin State amateur champion to use the state amateur exemption by winning the state amateur to get an exemption into the U.S. amateur. According to David Schefter of the USGA, Gary, I believe eight. There were 52 qualifiers using that exemption, and then eight of them got into match play. I believe nine, if you count the California amateur champion who was already exempt. But it was a tough go for Garrett Jones and an 81-75, 81 at Hazeltine. I don't know if I've ever seen a course play so firm and so fast as Hazeltine. And then a 75 at Chaska Town Course. He drove the ball beautifully. Gary, he putted beautifully, but his iron game just kind of betrayed him this past week, and he felt really bad about it. It'll be interesting to see. He was contemplating. He entered a U.S. Mid-Am qualifier over in Sioux Falls, I believe it is, this Monday. And, you know, hoping to get into the U.S. Mid-Am. He hasn't played in a USGA event since the U.S. Mid-Am in 2018. And I guess, Gary, you followed USGA events longer than I. How big a deal was it that this was his first USGA event in 6 years? And, is it like riding a bike? I felt looking at that setup that it was unlike riding a bike.
Yeah, you know, it's those USGA events, when you get to the national championship level, Rob, are, as you know, you've covered a bunch of them too, they're different animals. There's a lot of self-imposed pressure, I think, on people who play in those events, men and women, boys and girls, because you're a big fish in a small pond, you know, when you get through qualifiers, and then you get to the national stage, and you're a little fish in a big pond. There's an awful lot of talent. And I'm sure Garrett really, you know, it came out in your story, Rob, and some of his quotes that he really wanted to represent Wisconsin. And he did. I mean, he's a class act. And no matter what he shoots, he's always a gentleman. And, you know, he's just a class act on the golf course. But I know he wanted to represent Wisconsin better score-wise. And I know he was disappointed. And it's funny, Rob, that you pointed out in your story that his approach game, his iron game was off, because I saw signs of that, too, even when he won the State Am. You know, I followed him in the last round, and he had some very squirrely iron shots, and even short irons, but his short game was magnificent at Merrill Hills. So it was interesting to read that he's still struggling with that part of his game a little bit.
So I'd ask you this question then, Gary. He speculated that it could be equipment. He may need, you know, some swing instruction help there. Which did you do first? I mean, I don't know how old his equipment was or is, But he's 39 years old. But, you know, they just bought a house. Actually, they're building a house, and they're in the process of selling another house. I mean, there's a lot going on in his life. But if you were trying to speculate between equipment and instruction, is that middle part of the game, is that something that probably needs the most instructional help in terms of another set of eyes?
Yeah, I would say, I don't know what his situation is as far as, when the last time he was fitted for clubs or fitted for a set of irons, and I'm sure he's thought about this. It might be time to go to a reputable club fitter, someone who he trusts to get a set of eyes on him as he experiments maybe with different shafts and different shaft head combinations with his irons, because as you pointed out, as I saw at the State Am, he drives the ball well in his short game. The strength of Garrett's game is his, you know, chipping, pitching and putting, and he's really good in that area. So I would say, you know, it might be time to get fitted. You know, he's 39 years old. I don't know how long he's had this set of irons, but your swing changes as you age a little bit, and it might be time to just take a look at that.
Well, hopefully he gets good results, whatever he chooses to do. If he goes to Sioux Falls this week, there's also another qualifier he can go to in Cedar Rapids. He has the option because he was supposed to go to the one down at the Legend at Merrill Hills where he won the State Am. They had the qualifier this past week, and so we'll see where that goes. His mom and dad both walked all 36 holes at Chaska Town Course on Tuesday and at Hazeltine on Monday, as did his wife, Lexi. Nice to see them. And quite honestly, Gary, you know, not a lot of familiar names made it deep into match play. And and as we record this, it's going to be, I believe the guy's name is Mason Kent. No, Noah Kent. And against Jose Luis Ballester of Spain, a 19-year-old from Naples, Florida, against a 20-year-old from Spain. And and the 19-year-old from Naples is a sophomore at the University of Iowa. I don't know if I've had more people say, what's a guy from Iowa or a guy from Florida doing going to college in Iowa? Well, it's working, whatever it is.
Well, you know what? Interesting, Rob. I actually played golf with Noah Kent. He's the stepson of Dana Fry, the golf architect who did Erin Hills and Wild Rock. And when I was down in Florida a couple of years ago, Dana Fry set me up at Calusa Pines, which he designed, and he set me up to play with his stepson, Noah Kent. And, you know, I introduced myself on the first tee, and it's Noah Kent. He's like 6'4". You know, at that time he was 17 years old maybe, and hit the ball like 340, you know, just crushed it. And Dana has texted me over the years as his stepson, you know, developed. And obviously Dana has access to a lot of places and knows a lot of people in the game. And Noah Kent was playing practice rounds with Dustin Johnson, you know, when he was 14 or 15 years old. So this kid has had a bright future for a long time, and I wasn't really surprised to see his name there.
Well, my daughter was out watching the day as he got through the semifinals. It's been an interesting week up there, and it kind of segues into our next conversation about the fact that Wisconsin will get a U.S. amateur, and it'll be coming to Whistling Straits, and it'll be coming quite soon compared to some of the other USGA events we have that have, you know, after they're announced. I mean, it's we're in 2024, and in 4 years from now, we'll be able to have a U.S. amateur. From what I saw this week, it's going to be pretty exciting. They did a wonderful job at Hazeltine. They charge admission now. They kind of have the fence around the course, but that's where it stops being a really big event, Gary, and it starts being the event that everybody seems to love that's ever attended a U.S. amateur. You walk in the fairways. I mean, it is amazing that you could walk in the fairways with the groups you were following, and outside of maybe the tee boxes, there really were no ropes per se, and we get to have one of those in our backyard.
Really cool, Rob. You know, I covered the 2011 USAM at Erin Hills, and you're right, walked right along with the competitors. You know, Kelly Kraft beat Patrick Cantlay in the final two up back there in 2011. And, you know, when I wrote the story that Whistling Straits was getting these championships, I got some pushback by readers who said, this is no big deal. You know, one guy wrote yawn, you know, that no one gets excited about these except the players. This isn't true. As you point out, and we've both seen, there's a tremendous amount of talent at these, especially when you get to the U.S. amateur. And I went through the field in 2011, Rob, and there were 24 guys in the field who went on to win on the PGA Tour, including six major champions. So that's the kind of talent you see at a U.S. amateur.
Well, and the golfer won last year, Shipley out of Ohio State, you know, has been on every professional tour this summer, including, you know, the low amateur, the Masters and the U.S. Open, is that right?
Yeah, yep.
And so, I mean, and with college golf, with, you know, being televised, with, you know, with the impact these young golfers make at the major championships as amateurs, I mean, it really is a rare opportunity. It's kind of like I would equate it to when I was growing up in Wisconsin Rapids, and I know he wasn't there for long, and I'm not sure why he was even there because I thought he debuted right in the major leagues. But Paul Molitor, I think, spent a week or two in Beloit and came through Wisconsin Rapids and or wherever the Class A farm team of the Milwaukee Brewers was at that time. And, you know, you knew the guy was going to be great. And there was a buzz about him, and there was a buzz about him even before the internet. And now, you know, we get to see these kids, and I mean, they're going to be, you know, at Whistling Straits, and you know, it's a great opportunity to walk that course, walk the fairways of that course with the competitors. And you know, who knows what the landscape of college golf and amateur golf will look like in 2028? But it's only getting bigger and better based on what I saw in terms of the global impact. I mean, we had, I don't know if you ever got a hold of Parker Edsel, but
he was
you know, caddying for a kid from Uganda, was it?
Yes, the first golfer from Uganda ever to play in the U.S. Amateur. And I've got an item going in our Sweet Spot column on Monday that, you know, Parker talks about the experience and what an eye-opener it was, because the guy he caddied for learned the game by swinging, cut down eucalyptus tree branches, made his own golf balls, and learned to play golf on a soccer pitch. And that's the kind of story that you just love to see. And Parker was really inspired by caddying for Godfrey Nusbuga. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right.
It's worse than Shoffley, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, and it just, you know, and all these kids from around the globe are, you know, are getting here, you know, coming to play, you know, college golf, and that's how they, you know, wind up playing in the U.S. Amateur. But it does bring, you know, the world to roost in terms of golf and being able to, you know, see, you know, my daughter was a walking scorer the 2 days she volunteered, and one day was for, you know, a guy from France who was on the Walker Cup team and for Europe. And I mean, it's just, you know, again, you know, we talk about the Americans who will make that quick progress to the PGA Tour, maybe with a stop at the Korn Ferry Tour. It's the same on the other side of the pond. I mean, we're going to see them on the DP World Tour. We're going to see them in the Open Championship. And if not, coming over here and making an impact like Ludwig Hebert did in very quick fashion between PGA Tour U and things like the U.S. Amateur. So, I mean, again, you know, we've got the story still up there on, you know, high on the page. It's not just the U.S. Amateur, but then we've got the U.S. Junior Girls coming back to the state in 2034 at Sand Valley, but the U.S. Girls Junior also in 2037 at Whistling Straits. Gary, that is very rare to me. And then the Junior Amateur will be at Straits in 33, 4 years after it's at Sand Valley. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to look, and I don't know if I didn't read closely in your story if you had it, but I mean, regardless, I mean, it's very rare for this to be, you know, coming to our state at two different courses. I mean, how many courses have, you know, the ability and the desire to host a U.S. junior girls, junior boys, you know, in within a decade span?
Yeah, and the junior girls in 2019 at Century World, it's quite amazing when you look at what's coming up, Bob. 8 USGH national championships in the next 13 years, starting with the U.S. Women's Open at Erin Hills next year, and including those U.S. junior girls and boys and the U.S. Amateur. We're going to be pretty busy at Wisconsin.golf, Rob.
Well, I just, you know, we are, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I had a blast up there at Hazeltine, and, you know, and then got to walk, and I don't know when this story is coming, but I've talked to people about it, the parties involved, but Luke Lanton, the newly minted number one ranked amateur in the world, I just went out to Hazeltine on Wednesday to hang out while my daughter was walking scoring, and I get a message from Brian Kirsch, whose sons Noah and daughter Rihanna were high school golfers at Lancaster. They're now back at school at IUPUI for Noah and in Southern Indiana for Brianna, but they grew up traveling the junior golf circuits with the Clanton family, and they've got pictures and stories. And then I went out and talked to David Clanton, Luke's dad, while he was watching, you know, Luke, you know, win his first match. And I mean, my goodness, you know, what a small world that, you know, that they would, you know, share, you know, I guess verbos and things, and then make the experience fun for their kids. And you know, Luke Lanton is one of these guys whose, you know, star is rising and rising quickly. And you know, here they were, you know, playing junior golf with a family from Lancaster, Wisconsin. It's kind of cool. And David Clanton and Brian Kirsch, two peas in a pod. I know now why Noah and Brianna are so soft spoken, because it was hard to get a word in edgewise. But David Clanton also worked with both Brianna and Noah on their game. So it's just kind of cool, and it just kind of shows you how small the golf world is. But Gary, right now the eyes of the golf world in Wisconsin will be on Minocqua Country Club this week, and I don't think I quite appreciated what it means for the eyes of the golf world to be on Minocqua until I drove over to the Northwoods today, and I was driving on Highway 8, and, you know, for years and years and years, Highway 8 is kind of that, you know, it doesn't get much further north than Highway 8. Well, I'm further north than Highway 8. I had to go on Highway 70, and now I think I'm not sure which highway I'm on now, but I'm up in Park Falls, and I mean, this is significant. We are way up here, but we're going to be on a course that hosted one of the greatest Wisconsin State amateurs, won by Harrison Ott in an 8-hole playoff over Thomas Longbella back in, I believe it was 2018. What are you most excited about coming up here to see in the State Open at Minocqua?
Well, I've heard so many good things about the golf course, and I can't wait to see it. You know, it's a place where Steve Stricker and Jerry Kelly are members, and I know Steve plays there quite a bit with his family when he's up north hunting and fishing. And I just can't wait to see the golf course, because I've heard so many good things about it. But also the field is so good. You know, as you pointed out in your very comprehensive who to watch at Minocqua Country Club, Rob, boy, you spent some time on that, I can tell. But it's too bad we'll be missing, you know, players that with the talent of a Hunter Eichhorn or a Longbella, Kirsten Hunt, Sam Anderson, but, you know, for different reasons and all good reasons, but still the field is going to be really, really good. That State Open field is always exceptional.
And, you know, we lamented that back in the Stricker era. You know, we love seeing them at the State Open, but if they were really doing their job and doing it well, they weren't going to be coming back to play the State Open. And that's kind of what we've got with these four guys who are trying to, you know, work their way up the developmental tours there. But that said, you know, I think if we start right at the top, last year Cameron Huss and Harrison Ott finished 1-2 with Cameron getting the State Open Championship at Century World as an amateur. He'll turn professional. He's entered as a professional, so he has turned, and it'll be his debut as a pro. And Harrison Ott, really, I think Gary has a lot riding on the State Open to get you know, himself in a good mind for the PGA Tour Q School process that starts next month. How do you see those two guys at presumably the top, but yet, you know, anything can happen?
Well, you're right, but, you know, I wouldn't be one bit surprised if we saw them finish 1-2 again this year, and maybe in the opposite order, or maybe the same order. I mean, they're two of the five best players in the state. Clearly, they're, you know, exceptional talents. Harrison has proven it with his success, certainly at the state level, and Phyllis Cameron now coming out of UW with a couple of victories his senior year and being a defending champion. These two are going to be, as you point out in your five players to watch, you rank them 1 and 2, Harrison and Cameron, and they could easily be ranked 1 and 2 in the opposite order, but they are the cream of the crop in our state, and I would expect them to be on the leaderboard.
I think Harrison Ott is symbolic of a lot of guys that are trying to get, you know, out there on the PGA Tour. Had status last year in Canada. It parlayed over into the start of the PGA Tour Americas season, which combined the Latin America swing with the Canadian swing, but then lost the status midway through and has played in some state opens and some other things that Monday qualifiers. He's shot some good scores, Gary, but hasn't been consistent enough and hasn't finished high enough to really do anything, which, you know, again, is one of a problem that, you know, many young professional golfers face. I'll be interested to see what his game looks like. You know, I'll be interested to talk to Harry and find out, you know, how he feels, where he feels his deficiencies are right now. But, you know, I think you're right. I think, you know, if you got to think that he, you know, I mean, from his performance statistically, at least at Minocqua back at that State Am, I mean, this is a course he's very comfortable with.
Yeah, you're right, Rob. And, you know, I look at the other guys you named in your top five, and boy, any one of them could win too. Especially, I look at George Snizer, who now has the experience of teeing it up in a PGA Tour event behind him and under his belt. And, you know, George made a great run at last year at the State Open. Did he finish third last year or fourth?
P3.
Yeah. So he made a great run last year. And there's another guy who could easily win the tournament this coming week. And, you know, and then you name Jacob Beckman, who's had an incredible year as an amateur, getting ready for his junior year at UW.
I think it's possibly senior, but maybe there might be a COVID year in there that could come back again next year. I think a lot depends on because he did redshirt too, Mike Wilson's first years when he took over, and that really seemed to help Jacob. So, I'm not sure where we're at, you know, eligibility wise, but you know, he has at least 1 year left, and you know, he's playing the best golf of his career.
He is, and I guess I was a tiny bit surprised by number five. Tyler Leach, former Marquette player from Spring Valley. And the only reason I say I'm surprised is I really haven't seen his name in too many things this summer, but maybe he's been playing out of state that I haven't, you know. I think he lives in the Minneapolis area now, right?
I think so. And so yeah. He played in the Minnesota State Open, had the lead there after two rounds. He didn't play poorly in the final round, but that was the tournament where Carson Herron, Tim Herron's son, had the great final round. And rallied to win. And the other reason was he also, Tyler played really well down in our listen to me, the Arizona State Open.
That is yours.
Yeah. He opened up 68, 67 and closed with a 71. And that wasn't good enough. He wound up finishing T29. But so, you know, he's an all-weather guy. He's made the cut in each of the last five State Opens. And quite honestly, I mean, there were any number of guys I could put there. One I felt bad leading off was Zach Burry, because he's had two great State Open performances in the last 5 years. And he's the guy that's played a lot this summer. But again, much like Tyler, maybe much like Harry Ott, hasn't quite, you know, had that defining moment like George Knizer had in qualifying for a PGA Tour event. I think Harry might have gotten into one. I don't even know if Harrison's gotten into one Corn Ferry this year or not, I mean, there's a lot of guys that I think really need this State Open to, you know, maybe, you know, show themselves that they're seeing the progress that they need to see at this stage in the season as a mini tour professional, and that's just the mini tour professional.
Yeah, you're right. You know, and then, you know, beyond those five, Rob, who stands out in your mind among the guys who had to go through qualifying to get into the State Open? One name that I thought of that really jumped out at me was Nate Thompson, who, you know, we ran into him earlier this year. Was that Blue Mountain?
He's standing out there, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, you know, had a great run in Wisconsin, but has been hurt a little bit. He had, I think, a chest injury, was it?
It was,
Yeah. But has played some pretty good golf this summer since he's come back. Who stands out among the qualifiers in your mind, the guys who had to actually play their way in?
Well, there were two that really jumped out. One qualified in the regular qualifying, and that was Barrett Kelpin. He's the teaching professional out at Bishop's Bay Country Club this year. A former Big Ten conference golfer at Iowa. So there's Iowa again. He had played a bunch this year, but he finish T8 in the Michigan PGA Tournament of Champions, and that was a tournament he won last year. His resume is quite solid. I heard his name first earlier this year when Madison College they do have a coaching opening. And I was asking around people, and someone, you know, said, you know, maybe check with him out at Bishop's Bay. I don't know if that connection was ever made. I did pass his name along. He's 35 years old, and he played in 55 events on PGA Tour Latino America between 2014 and 23. So, you know, he's got the, you know, the playing background. And that's the neat thing about the State Open, Gary, like we've seen over the years. You know, Wisconsin attracts a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. I remember when Chip Sullivan was the teaching pro at Maple Bluff Country Club, and you know, comes in and you know, is an impact guy, you know, in the section and you know, in things like the state open. I think same with Robert McMillan when he was down at the Racine Country Club.
Yeah,
the guy that really is intriguing to me is Michael Nagy, who is a teaching professional now at the TPC Wisconsin. And lost in a playoff to Emmett Herb at the National Car Rental Wisconsin Assistance Championship back in July. And and he was the guy that shot 29 in the front nine at University Ridge in the, I guess they call it the section Stableford Classic. It was scored on the leaderboard as a Stableford event, but of course, you know, you still have a score that you can post, and he shot 63 that day. So he's got game, and he played, what was it, at Tennessee, I believe. And so, you know, those are guys that have kind of matriculated into the state, and, you know, boom, you know, they might, you know, be, you know, guys to watch.
I agree. And, you know, I was just thinking from a club professional standpoint, Rob, are we going to see club professionals? I think it's a little harder for them these days to win a state open. They used to dominate the state open. I mean, for years and years, we saw, you know, guys like Eddie Carassa and Jim Schumann and Ryan Helminen, all those guys come through and win state opens. I think it's a little bit of a bigger ask these days because of the number of mini tour players and really accomplished college players. But I played Monroe Golf Club yesterday, Rob, with Mike Morani, our old friend.
Oh,
Mike.
Wow.
And we had a great time. And Mike won the state open back in 83 at Meadowbrook. And I'll tell you what, he's 75 years old, and man, he can still play. He's not going to win a state open. In fact, he didn't even enter it this year. But some of those club pros have a lot of game, but they're up against it with these guys who play golf, you know, for a living, basically.
Well, I think you know Michael Crawley came close last year. I believe he was the guy that finished T3 with Kneiser,
yep.
Top five. And then you know the one that I think I wouldn't be surprised. You know, to me, you know. And I don't know him well, but Mick Smith. You know, I think Mick Smith has the confidence to go out and put himself in the mix for a state open. You know, the key is, you know, A, getting there with those, you know, first two rounds. And then, you know, but then the bigger thing is that 36-hole finale. And, you know, you're talking about guys whose schedules barely allow them to play 18 in a week. And now you're asking them to play, you know, 36 in one day. To me, that might be where the rubber meets the road with the club professionals. But a guy that, you know, because I was going back to some previous state open, you know, David Bach, at the Kohler courses and at Whistling Straits, really,
yeah.
You know, quietly has had a good year this year. And he'd be a guy I wouldn't be surprised. And I don't know, you know, Gary, and the funny thing is neither you nor I were at Minocqua in 18. We were about 2 years into the site. I just moved out to California. I wasn't flying back for things. I did it all on text. And then that year, the crew from the WSGA was doing Instagram Live with or some form of live video off of each hole. I remember someone telling me later that their you know phone battery died. They had to borrow a phone because it went eight holes. But sure. I I'm curious as to whether the course will be somewhat the great equalizer because even though it's a relatively new course, I believe 2000 is when they took what was just a basic nine hole private club and converted it to this 18 hole you know gem in the Northwoods that you know just continues to impress people. That might be you know what keeps the club pros in it.
Yeah, especially you mentioned David Bach, and I've had a chance to watch him play some golf, Rob, in some various events, and he'll be among the five or six longest players in the field. He is tremendously long, and how much, you know, he can rely on that and use that at Minocqua, you know, since I haven't seen the course, I don't know about dog legs, I don't know how deep the rough is going to be, we'll find out when we get there. But if David Bach hits it in the fairway, as long as he is, you're right. He could be a threat.
Another guy to look at, you know, off the qualifying list, Kyle Bengston, spent a year at UW Green Bay, you know, college and college golf wasn't for him. He has since moved out to Arizona. I know he worked for a while at Greyhawk back when they were. He put some stuff on Instagram when they hosted the NCAA championship. But you know, he shot 68 in a pre-qualifier for the Waste Management Phoenix Open this year. But you know, that wasn't, he missed the Monday by four strokes, even shooting 68. That, you know, they, I think each of those pre-qualifiers, Gary had two spots in the Monday, which shows you how deep the Monday was. And,
yeah.
But you know, he finished T11 at the Legend at Merrill Hills, and you know, there are some similarities between you know, Merrill Hills and Minocqua in terms of you know somewhat tree lined and you know, classic, you know, characteristics. Although I think, you know, I think the greens complexes at Minocqua are going to be far different than Merrill Hills. But you know, I was surprised going back and looking that he finished T11 there. It was kind of very quietly, and but yet he's played a lot of golf, and but yet he is also, I believe, a Timber Ridge guy up here and not a Minocqua Country Club guy. But he was a part of that crew at Lakeland High School that kind of put you know, Minocqua golf on the map at the high school level. He was on those first three teams that managed to state out of the six in a row that have qualified. So that would be one. And then, you know, you look at the college guys, and we go back, or the college guys that are on the process of getting to the professional level, and Drake Wilcox keeps popping up. I mean, after he had the disappointment at Merrill Hills, not having a great final round, he went out and shot a great score and won his qualifier to get here.
Yeah, Drake has a ton of game. And you know, getting back to Kyle for a second, although he's not, I don't think he's a Minocqua Country Club guy. He is, you know, a Woodruff native, and obviously he's going to feel more comfortable on that course maybe than a lot of guys who will be playing in the North Woods for the first time. I mean, we haven't really talked about it, but the State Am has not ever been this far north, has it?
No, and when I
– Or State Open, rather.
Right. When I
yeah.
As I looked at the map when I wrote the thing for the yearbook, I believe on a line it would be Max Walton Braves and Bailey's Harbor hosted it one year way back in like the 20s or 30s. But
wow.
No, I mean, it hasn't been north of Stevens Point Country Club, I don't believe Wausau Country Club has hosted it, but one of those two would be as far north as it is. And you know, that'll be the other thing that I think you know, will be a factor. And you know, just there'll be a lot of people living on the road this week up here in Minocqua.
Yeah, including us. And
including us.
Yeah, you are already in the area, and I roll in. I'm going to leave my house hopefully at 5 a.m. Monday morning, so I should get there about, I'm hoping for, I think it's about a 4.5-hour drive, so hopefully, you know, 9:30, 10 at the latest, you know, I'll roll in there. Will you already be at the court?
Yeah, I will be there right away, Gary. I think 7:15 a.m. Monday, first tee times. I noticed that it looks like, and I don't know if you've studied the tee times very closely, but they really put some of the, the exempt players that from qualifying towards the front of the tee times. I seem to remember them always being kind of in the middle. You know, you had a few, you know, the qualifiers early, then exempt, and then do the qualifiers in each wave. So that might be a wrinkle too.
Yeah, it might be. I see that a lot of the big names, the guys we've been talking about, are kind of spread throughout the tee times, both in the morning and afternoon waves. Yeah, like I said, I'll try to get there around 9:30, 10 o'clock. I know you'll be probably on the first tee at that point taking photos, and I know Jim Kelsch, our colleague, will be there. I know Jim and I are sharing a Verbo, and you've got your own place to stay, right?
I'm staying with friends. That's been kind of the theme this week. Stay with my daughter at for the U.S. Am, which is, I mean, literally Gary in her backyard. You know, she actually walked the Chaskaton course on Monday during a break from work to watch some of the action. And, I mean, it was really fun. It was a five-minute drive to Hazeltine and a two-minute drive to Chaskaton course. So I'll be staying with friends who are this weekend hosting. They moved up here from Heartland, and they're hosting a bunch of guys from the Legends Clubs down there. So, and that apparently is just a few miles down the road. And so that'll be kind of cool. It's a different world up here, and I think it'll be a fun week, to be honest with you.
Well, we've always had fun when we've gotten together and covered these State Ams and State Opens in another part of the state. Some Sand Valley was a blast, and
you know, than Erin Hills last year for the State AM, but we've been all over the map, and it'll be fun to get up north and hopefully maybe even play a little golf on Wednesday morning before we get to cracking on the final round with that 36-hole finale on Wednesday.
Yeah, I feel bad. So I played 36 here this weekend over in Minnesota at a fun course, and then I out of the blue, I should have forwarded you Mike Murphy, who is in the field at age 68, the former Madison City champion and favorite of Talking Deck Golf. He actually texted me to ask if we needed a place to stay. And I told him we were all accounted for, and then I got a text about a day later. He has an opening tomorrow at Timber Ridge. I've never played Timber Ridge. I've covered two section championships. My daughter, who's in Minnesota, was actually in a car seat carrier so that would have been 1996. I can tell you that. I can tell you 1 month after she was born, Gene and I were up here for the Wisconsin PGA section championship. Odds are Eddie Teresa won it, but I don't remember who won it. Actually, no, it was somebody else. But it was so much fun to see, you know, Timber Ridge, this area. So I'm going to play Timber Ridge with Murph in the morning. And then, we got an invitation to go play Rhinelander Country Club tomorrow evening. But I know that you won't be up here quite yet. I'm going to try to get down there and see it from Brad Kowieski, who is another, you know, fan of the podcast, fan of us on Twitter, and his son plays at Rhinelander High School. And I played, Gary, this is how far we've come in junior golf. When I was going into my senior year of high school, we had two out-of-town junior tournaments available to us. One was at Bass Lake Country Club in Antigo, and the other was at Rhinelander Country Club. And so I actually took teammates up to those and played in both, not very well. But I don't remember a thing about Rhinelander Country Club. So I'll be interested to see what that looks like. And it'd be cool if we can get to Trout Lake. My friend that I'm staying with, that Legends crew from Milwaukee played Plum Lake and Saner, 9-hole course with the Crater Green. And then he was calling from St. Germain. They were about to head out for their 18-hole round there, and then they're going to Timber Ridge tomorrow. Trout Lake is on my bucket list because I never played there. So if we can do Trout Lake, I will check off three courses between Timber Ridge, Rhinelander Country Club, and Trout Lake that I really haven't played. I don't know if I can count what I did in high school as playing golf. So that would be kind of cool.
Absolutely. I played Trout Lake one time, and it was probably, I'm going to guess, around 1981 or 82. And I don't remember much about it, so I'm looking forward to getting there and playing it again. It'll seem like the first time for me. I just remember the clubhouse had a giant wraparound porch around it. That's the only thing I remember about Trout Lake. And I know it's undergone a renovation this year, and so looking forward to seeing the changes and trying to remember some of the golf course as we make our way around. Hopefully we'll get on. I'll contact Scott Howard in the morning. I'll text him, and sure, we'll see if he can get us in a tee time early Wednesday.
Well, and I know Rob Schultz, who was the golf writer for many years, the cap time, raved about Trout Lake, so that would be a good one. And while we're on the subject of golf courses, the other one that I played this week, my daughter took me over to the Loop at Chaska. And an old par 3 course on ground owned by Hazeltine National, but run by the city at one point, and now a private group has taken it over, and they've kind of created, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of a little bit longer Missing Links, and really creative green complexes, and a big putting course that, and the kids, you know, can come and play it for basically nothing, but the public is welcome to play at a very nominal fee, and it was in great shape, and it was really a blast to play, and you know, you think about Chaska Town Course and Hazeltine that have teamed up on numerous USGA events. And of course, Hazeltine, you know, being a Ryder Cup venue, a US Open venue, a PGA venue, it's kind of neat to have. You can play a golf course in Chaska, Minnesota, right in the shadows of all that history. So that was kind of cool. But and then on the drive over here today, Gary, I passed two courses that I think there was only two. Barron's Rolling Greens in Barron, Wisconsin, And that was pretty cool because there's a hotel right in the front of it, and the clubhouse looks brand spanking new. As I was driving by, kind of looking one way for a second, keeping my eyes on the road, and then I was as I crossed the border from Minnesota into Wisconsin, I didn't realize St. Croix Valley Golf Club in St. Croix Falls is right there, like the first right past the stoplight, and you know, that's got to be a great view because that's perched up there. I don't know if there's views of the Mississippi, but it's out there. And so, you know, you just never know where you're going to find courses up this way. And I'm in Park Falls, so I believe that's Chequamegon National Golf Club is somewhere up here. And I go back to our guide that we have online. You know, we look at that every year. We just don't put that up there and leave it. We actually, you know, make sure that those courses are still around. So I see the names of these courses every year, and it's so cool to be able to go through, you know, some places that I've never been on Highway 8 today to get over here. And it was just a very peaceful drive, and fun to see what we've, you know, what life is like up here. It's the, I believe, the Heart of North Conference is basically, I went through the entire batch of schools, passed a few high schools, Cameron, some of those. But, yeah, we're up here, buddy. We're up here.
Yeah, I think there's almost 450 public golf courses in Wisconsin. I've played 190 of them, which sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. But just think, I have 250 to go to play all the public golf in our state. So there's tons of courses up there that I have not played. Hopefully, I'll get on them, one or two of them on this trip, and more as time goes on.
Absolutely, that's kind of my MO as well. Gary, I think we're ready for the State Open to tee it up on Monday morning. Appreciate the time, and we'll look forward to seeing you up here at Minocqua Country Club.
Perfect, Rob. See you in a couple days.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf.